The content of the following program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, treatment, or cure. Always consult your physician or a health professional with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition.
One Life Radio is brought to you by our sponsors, great companies like Enviromedica, makers of Terraflora Deep Immune Symbiotic. Find Terraflora and the full line of Enviromedica products at Enviromedica.com. Castor and Pollux, the maker of America's number one organic pet food. Visit CastorPollexPet.com for their complete line of organic and sustainably sourced pet foods. Organifi, the all-day superfood system that revives in the morning, energizes midday, and relaxes in the evening. Visit Organifi.com/OLR for 20% off. That's ORGANIFI.com/OLR. The Wellbeing Journal and Veg World Magazines. Sun Warrior, the pioneers of plant-based proteins. Go to sunwarrior.com and use the code OLR for 20% off your order. The International Society of Sports Nutrition, the only nonprofit academic society dedicated to the science of evidence-based sports nutrition and supplementation. And Thorne Research, visit our dispensary at oneliferadio.com for 20% off your order and free shipping. You can find more information on all our sponsors, including links to listener discounts, on the oneliferadio.com sponsor page. Thank you for listening to One Life Radio.
Higher, baby. Do you want to go higher, baby? You're in the right place. You're listening to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Junior in the Mix. We are broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas on iHeartMedia, as well as KMET in Southern California on ABC News Talk. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. I woke up this morning and I don't know. I've been working so much on all kinds of stuff. And I was like, what time is it? I was like, oh, my gosh. That was at 11:43. I'm like, I better get upstairs. I know, right? I got a lot done, though.
Good.
I did. And it's a beautiful day here in Dallas. The weather
it
is just gorgeous lately.
Mm-hmm.
I just love the fall. Did you do anything special between yesterday and today since I talked to you last?
Well, yesterday was my wife's birthday.
Nice.
Yeah, so we were both working, so I ordered dinner from one of her favorite restaurants, and I had a cake, and we just kind of, just kind of hung out at the house, because I work from home in the afternoon, so I would, go back and forth and do things, and so anyway, we just had dinner and that, and we're going to celebrate this weekend, though. I took Saturday off, so me and the girls are going to take her to probably going to go hang out in downtown Denton somewhere and just kind of
hang
out, go to lunch, stuff like that. So
happy birthday, Sherry.
Yes. Yes. She is. We had a good day. And she's going to get to celebrate with her friends and us on the weekend. So, yeah.
Birthdays are special and they should always be celebrated. And I think of I always have loved my mother. I got it from my mother. My mother loved to celebrate birthdays, not in too much of a big way. You know, when we were kids, we just got a homemade cake from our mom that was on the cake stand that she got when she was 5 years old from her mom. And I still have it. In fact, she gave it to my oldest daughter on her 5th birthday. But the thing is, you know, you never know when you're going to lose somebody. Case in point. So it's kind of funny how poignant life can be at times. And so, and just little things like a birthday party. But I often think of my nephew, Richard, who passed away, in 2001, I believe it was. Mm-hmm. He was 34 years old. And anyway, you know, he'd been not himself for a while. Long story short, like I threw him a kid birthday party with the, what are those ninjas that had, they were different. One of the
Teenage
turtles.
Mutant Ninja Turtles?
The turtles, yeah.
Teenage
I threw
Mutant,
him a, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like I threw him that, and they had a theme. We had the cake and everything. And now keep in mind, he was 33 years old and he felt like a kid, but he loved it. He absolutely loved it. Little did we know that that August after or early evening, that was going to be the last birthday that he ever had.
Mm.
He died a few months later.
That was great that you did that for him.
Yeah, and so I think it's important to always acknowledge and celebrate, even if it's just in a small way, somebody's birthday that you love.
Yeah, I agree.
It's important.
Yeah.
So
no,
you never know.
It's a good day to make someone feel special. So
that's right. It is, and you got to love them while you has them.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh. Well, we've got a great show today. We do. I love having Von Englund on the air with us. Von, are you there?
Yes, I am. I'm right here.
Yeah. How you doing?
I'm great. It's been a good morning so far. You're right. It is beautiful outside. And so I'm looking forward to the show today. And I appreciate you having me on.
Oh, yeah. No, you're just always so great. People, you're one of, you know, our listeners love you. We always hear it like, oh, I really love that show with Vaughn. He's really good. And so I can't wait to talk about our topic today, which is surviving betrayal by your partner. This affects a lot of people. But let me introduce you first for people that maybe have not heard you before, Vaughn, that are maybe listening for the first time. Vaughn Eaglin is a licensed professional counselor, supervisor, and works with two group practices in the Dallas area. He is a certified couple relationship trainer and sees a wide range of clients addressing men's issues, anger management, abuse, and addiction, just to name a few. He is also a doctoral candidate at the University of North Texas in the Counseling and Higher Education Department. His PhD research focuses on couple relationships dialogue, and you can find him at VonTalksTherapy.com or follow him on Instagram at VonTalks. Okay, so let's talk about this. You know, Vaughn, what is considered a betrayal in a romantic relationship?
That's a really, really good question. I would assert the fact that there are many types of betrayal within romantic relationships. You've heard me talk about trust before because trust is really a multidimensional component within relationships. So trust comes in many different forms. For instance, I want to make sure that my partner doesn't cheat on me. I want to trust that you won't cheat on me. I want to make sure that you're a good financial steward or that you're going to take care of the kids. So it's very possible to trust somebody in one area, like with, you know, that you won't cheat, you're a good financial steward and take care of the kids, but I don't trust you with your in-laws, you know, because your parents are crazy, you know. Well, I don't trust that you're always going to keep your word, or I don't trust that you're going to be there for me sexually or whenever I try to initiate intimacy, or I don't trust that you're going to be there for me whenever the chips are down and my back's against the wall. So it is a multidimensional component within relationships. So, and I would even say that there are different types of betrayal from a intensity standpoint. So you have like minor betrayal, and then you also have what I would classify as something that's extremely severe, and that can cause a lot of issues later on in the relationship, especially if it's an extreme betrayal. So,
yeah, and I think the line has gotten somewhat blurred. You know, in the age of social media and dating apps, I feel like the definition of betrayal has changed a little bit, as in like our actions that used to be considered a betrayal sometimes are looked upon now like they're not that bad anymore. It's somehow become more socially acceptable to be what I would call maybe or classify as an emotional cheater, because you can emotionally cheat without physically cheating, right?
Yeah, I would agree there. So some of that depends on the definition of the person. So I have couples that come to my office and they say, hey, my partner cheated. Did they sleep with someone? No, but I still believe they cheated. They had an emotional affair, or they started, or they were on the pathway to cheating. So I classify that as cheating. So some of that is an individual value for most people. But by and large, most people tend to think, you know what, I know what cheating is, and there's a, you know, most people in society know what cheating is whenever you're having a relationship behind my back. I don't know about it. You're not transparent. You have a double life, or you've been deceptive in some way. Mm-hmm. And so most people tend to think that. But with social media and the advent of like ghosting and, you know, I don't want to talk to you, and, you know, you can have a secret life that your partner doesn't know about just, you know, by opening your phone up. The game has changed. And you're right. It definitely has changed.
Yeah. You know, we've talked about this before on the show, and you say the phone. I can't even imagine being in a relationship where that other part, where whoever my partner was, had a need or a want to check my phone or my emails. If I feel like if you have to do that, you are in a miserable relationship. Am I wrong? Junior, what do you think?
I'm sorry, my headphones cut out.
Oh, that's okay. No, we're just talking about, you know, if you have to look at your partner's phone or email, you feel like you have to check them. I just think that's a horrible sign of a relationship.
Yeah, I missed that part there. Yeah, no, it is, definitely. But, you know, the thing is, I think I've said this before, my wife and I, we don't even have each other's passwords. Like, I have never looked at her phone.
And why would you?
And I know she's given it to me before, but honestly, I've never used it, so I don't even remember it. And, you know, she knows mine. And I mean, I don't know. I don't even care. Like, I just put my phone down. I don't worry about her checking it, because I just feel like, I don't know, it's a private thing for me. And she knows I'm not doing anything. I know she's not doing anything. There's no reason for us to go through each other's phones. And I think once you have to start doing that, there's probably an issue. And, you know.
A trust issue, which is at the very root, right? The core of
exactly.
any relationship. Right, Vaughn?
Yeah, I agree with you. So, the you know, when we talk about trust, Junior, it sounds like you and your wife have a large degree of trust within your relationship. Yes. And that's a good thing, because trust is a foundational component in every single relationship. If you don't have trust, it's going to be very hard to build your relationship, because you're always going to be looking over your shoulder and paranoid. Now, to your point, Bernadette, I can't say across the board, because, you know, there are some people, you know, let's say if you have mistrust issues and it's from a past relationship, and then you're carrying that baggage into your other relationships, so you automatically start out, even if the other person is trustworthy, you're looking at them with skepticism, saying that, you know what, I'm overgeneralizing my experience. In other words, you know, I had three guys cheat on me, therefore all guys cheat. You're my new relationship. You're the fourth guy that comes along. I believe you may cheat on me, so I'm just going to go through your phone. So that's violating someone's privacy. You know, at least most people would think that's violating
someone's privacy. Oh, big time.
You know? And so there are some reasons. I mean, some people look through phones, and, you know, it's not simply because you've done something, but it may be the guy before you, or the person before you, or the woman before you, whoever that was, you know. So, but to your point, trust, you have to have that, and you have to be able to respect the person's privacy. You want to have someone who has a lot of integrity where you don't have to be looking over your shoulder. You're not paranoid in a sense.
Yeah. Speaking of paranoid, you know how you have that person, and we've all experienced this, I think, at one point in our lives or another, once you're a certain age, that, you know, somebody who's really jealous or really suspicious or very untrusting, aren't they typically the ones that are out? They're the ones that you can't trust. Isn't there some truth to that? You know, because why are you thinking like that? If you're so, you know, right?
I like to think people tell on themselves quite a bit. In fact, there's even research to back this up. Here's a true story, Bernadette. I don't know if I should be saying this on the air, but okay.
Go ahead.
So I was applying. I was in high school, and I was applying for Home Depot. And at the time, they were paying more than Lowe's Home Improvement. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go work at Home Depot. I think they were paying like $10 an hour. I was like, hey, you know what? I'm going to make a lot of money. And they asked me a question on the application. They said, have you used marijuana in the last 3 months? And stupidly, I checked, oh, yeah, but I didn't think that was a big deal. And I told on myself. And then it was the exact same application at Lowe's. And then when I looked at the question, I said, why the hell did I circle yes on this? I told on myself because I was so used to being in the drug culture, because I had family members that sold drugs. I had a lot of friends that it was kind of normal to me. Like, and similarly, when people have what I would call an elastic morality, or they tend to have a low integrity, a lot of times they treat other people like they believe they
right.
They
That's right.
Function. And so in some way, they're a little bit self-absorbed because they think that other people should act and think and, you know, respond to situations the same way I do. But, you know, many times if you find someone and they're extremely, you know, suspicious of you because they think you may be, you know, cheating on them, many times that's because they've been considering cheating on you, you know.
Yeah.
But again,
yeah.
that's not all the time across the board. But, you know, I do believe on some level people eventually will tell on themselves. You'll see their character as you continue to be with that person.
Oh, absolutely. I've seen it many times in my life. I'm looking at the clock. We're going to go for a quick break. More coming up with Von Eaglin, everyone. Stay tuned. You're listening to One Life Radio.
Want to advertise on One Life Radio? Send us an email, info@onelifradio.com.
It's back to school time, and that means that you need to boost your immune defenses with Organifi. The Immune Support Bundle is a double pack of protection for your hardworking immune system. It's a holistic approach to wellness, combining daily support with extra defenses when you need them most. All organic vitamin C, zinc, and adaptogenic superfoods give your innate immunity a helping hand. For a limited time, your Immune Support Bundle will include an extra box of immunity, a $40 value, at no charge. That way, you and your family can feel safer. Get yours by going to Organifi.com. That's Organifi.com.
Celebrating 10 years on the air. Thank you for listening to One Life Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Junior in the Mix and Von Eaglin. We are broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas on iHeartMedia, as well as KMET in Southern California on ABC News Talk. If you're just now joining us, Von Eaglin is a licensed professional counselor supervisor and works with two group practices in the Dallas area. He is a certified couple relationship trainer and sees a wide range of clients addressing men's issues, anger management, abuse, and addiction, just just to name a few. He is also a doctoral candidate at the University of North Texas in the Counseling and Higher Education Department. His PhD research focuses on couple relationships dialogue. You can find him at VonTalksTherapy.com or follow him on Instagram at VonTalks. Wanted to put your qualifications out there before we start discussing this very, this is a very serious subject, even though we're kind of, you know, having fun with it, but surviving betrayal by your partner, there's a question written here that says, do people in love betray their partners? I don't believe that you can actually be in love and betray that person. I don't think they can fit into the same sentence or the same, room, whatever you want to call it, right? How can you say you love someone and then betray them?
Well, so I guess you would also have to, assert the idea that people in love do not cheat. Is that what I'm hearing you say, Bernadette? Is that correct?
So, yes, I would say that if you love someone, no, you're not going to hurt them. You're not going to betray them. You're not going to be disloyal to them. Now, keep in mind, I'm Italian. So that's like the, I was taught at age 3, loose lips sink ships and you don't betray or you're not disloyal. I mean, it's just like part of the culture. That's how you get yourself whacked.
I guess, if you take it to the grave. You don't say anything about it under no circumstances.
Well, you don't betray people. Disloyalty is like such a sin, if you will.
Yeah, but I would probably say that, there are times when I do have people that come to my office and I've, met people in my life that they found themselves in situations that they did not, anticipate, they didn't know they would get into. They, violated a few boundaries, and I would even say micro boundaries at first. But then, after they continued on, they began to rationalize the behavior, and then they ended up cheating, or they ended up having an affair, or they ended up betraying their partner. And that doesn't, mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily have to be an affair. You can have, you can be, have financial infidelity. You can have, you can, like we said before, you can betray your partner in a lot of different ways. However, when we talk about that, I like to believe that we have what I call elastic morality. And what I mean by that is that, we tend to believe that character is something that is stable and that it's something that you can depend on. But the truth of the matter is that it is not always like that, because you can have different reactions in different situations, and your character will sometimes shift back and forth depending on the situation that you're in, because you're rationalizing things with yourself, kind of like this mental jujitsu in a sense. And mm-hmm. In fact, I have a question for you, Bernadette.
Go ahead. I love questions.
Here we go. Do you believe a single transgression should brand somebody, like with an indelible mark, like you've marked a character? So if a person cheated one time, does that all of a sudden make that person a cheater lifelong?
I do kind of believe once a cheater always, once a cheater always a cheater, and maybe the degree of that disloyalty or betrayal, maybe I don't know, but yes, to answer mm-hmm. your question, I think that unless some real work is done and maybe a huge lesson is learned, but anybody that I've ever known that has betrayed me is just lacking in moral character. Period. And is a little bit narcissistic. I'll add that too.
You're talking to a guy who used to cheat on women, Bernadette. I've never cheated on my wife, but there were plenty of women that I did cheat on in the past.
I know.
Maybe I fit in your what you just said in terms of I did have insight. Some epiphanies, revelation that, this is probably not the way I need to go. Well, it's not a good strategy if you want to have a long-term relationship. I'll say it like
right.
that. So,
right.
But I do believe that all people have the ability or the potential to lie, cheat, and steal. And there are times when
yes.
what happens is that, whatever environment you're in, become like that thing, whether it may be lying, cheating, or stealing, or having like low integrity, is socially acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Like people who were in, this is an extreme example, but the guards that, were in, at Auschwitz, they didn't think they would be killing, Jews, but they found themselves doing that. They never knew that they would be doing that kind of thing. Like they didn't start
right.
out in their life, I feel like, enslaving some people and killing them. But again, it was socially acceptable at that time, period in life,
mm-hmm.
So again, depending on the situation, if you come from an environment, let's say, where tomorrow is not promised, you don't necessarily know where your next meal is coming from, there's no reason for you, because the environment's not stable and it's chaotic,
right,
there's no reason for you to make plans for the future, because I'm going to live for today. So you're going to be impulsive. You're going to do
right.
things that you normally wouldn't do. So
well,
I think some of that matters. So
yeah, well, it does. And what we're talking about, two different things, I think, here, because anybody who becomes desperate would do desperate thing. I can tell you that, you know, if it came down to my children starving, I would steal some apples or whatever. I would steal whatever it takes to feed my children if I had to. I would ask politely first for help, but if I couldn't get it. So desperate people do desperate things. I understand that. And people can get brainwashed. And then, you know, humans have the tendency to have that sheep mentality. When you were speaking about what happened, you know, with the Nazis and the Jews, and that terror, the Holocaust was just horrible. It's hard to even believe that even happened, that human beings could be so evil. But I think when it comes to betrayal in relationships, I just think that once you break that trust, I don't think there's any real true mending it, in my opinion. I really think that you have to move on.
Gotcha. Yeah, so, you know, I mean, I've had couples that come into my office, and there's been a big violation in trust. You've heard me talk about this before, like, especially if there's, like, an affair. For the other person, many times they may experience trauma. And so literally they come into my office and they have PTSD. So you'll see them have states of hypervigilance. Let's say their partner gets their cell phone and walks off to the other room by themselves to have a private conversation. All of a sudden that person goes into a state of hypervigilance, you know, or they have like a lot of ruminating thoughts, so intrusive thoughts, so to speak, or they may have nightmares. They may have what's called psychic numbing, where they kind of disassociate in a sense, but they experience features of PTSD because there was a severe betrayal, so to speak. Now, you know, when we talk about, you know, do people in love betray their partners? I would say that, you know, that there are times that does happen. Just because you're in love with someone doesn't necessarily mean that you cannot rationalize a cheating behavior or, you know, betraying your partner in some way. Because really, whenever you trust your partner, there's something that's in your mind that says, I depend on you, and there's an expectation that is set, and sometimes people do not live up to your expectation. You know, personally, I don't know if that's a reason to write them totally off, because people do make mistakes and you have to give them an opportunity to correct those behaviors. I like to say, you know what, it's okay to make mistakes. I just want you to make some new ones, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But you know, sometimes people in love do betray their partners.
Yeah, no, they do. They absolutely do. Whether or not they survive it is a different story. But, you know, a listener sent an email to me and wants me to ask you this, Vaughn. It says, Vaughn is an admitted cheater. Ask him what led him to cheat. So what led you to cheat before your wife? This is pre-wife. Okay. Why were you such a hound dog?
Okay. So, we've talked about this. We've joked about it before, but personally, okay, and this is a, you know, self-disclosure. I mean, it was kind of normal where I was coming from. You know, that was the standard. You know, you're supposed to have a lot of girls on your roster. I have a team, and, you know, my roster, exactly. I have some that I put in the game, some that are on the bench and the sideline. They're not the best players,
but
I will. I'll definitely sub them in whenever it's time to do so. But, you know, there's you have to envision character as something that is fluctuating. Yes, I'll say it like this. Your character is not a permanent trait, in a sense. So for me personally, I didn't think that was a way to have the kind of relationship. And I started dating somebody who I knew would not accept something like that. And so now, did I know it was wrong on some level in terms of lying and deceiving, you know, some of the women that I talked to? Of course I did. You know, and if I got caught, then I would try to, you know, get myself out of it. And I was pretty good at doing it. And I was a pretty good liar, you know. However, you know, so there was something that I wanted that was more important than what I was doing at that time. So I tend to believe that, you know, if you have a why that's big enough, you'll figure out how. And my wife, who I married, you know, she was the why that I needed. And for me personally, also, you know, had a spiritual transformation. I was trying to get closer to God. And I think that was also a big component for me. But everybody's different, you know. You're going to have to figure out what your value system is and why you do what you do. It's not just what you do, but why you do what you do, and trying to evaluate, like, because part of me cheating was, in all honesty, was trying to fill a void that I had in my life because I had feelings of inadequacy. So I thought that me being with a lot of women was something that would compensate for feelings of inadequacy and shame that I had. And men deal with that on, you know, a little differently than women do. However, that's what it was for me.
I never thought about it like that. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. It really is. So
it was a manifestation of something going on an internal struggle that I was having. So.
Well, yeah, and it's funny that you said this, you were on a spiritual reawakening or path as well, because, yeah, I don't think that you can live a life like that where you're just constantly lying and just, you know, have true inner peace.
Yeah, I mean, some people do. Now, I'm Christian, but, you know, I know, of course, and I have, you know, a lot of friends who aren't, and people, you know, you believe what you want. However, there is something called a reprobate mind. This means that, you know, once you get into it and it becomes normal, then you don't get convicted by it anymore. You don't care. It doesn't necessarily sting anymore. So you don't, you know, you don't feel that tug that, okay, this probably is not a good thing. And so, you know, You know, again, everybody's different. However, you know, I think spirituality is a component, or it should be a component of everyone's life. But again, that's my own value system, and everyone mm-hmm. has different values. So,
mm-hmm. Well, you know, that same listener sent another email, and they want to know, did you, Vaughn, care about the girls that you cheated on?
You know what? I would say yes. In fact, there were some that I went back and apologized to. You know what? I can't believe I treated you this way because there's a part of me that has compassion and empathy for other people. And because I am not someone who is antisocial and I don't care about the feelings of other people, and I know what I did was wrong, there was a part of me that felt like I needed to go back in and apologize because I treated you bad, and I was seeking forgiveness. Now, if they chose to forgive me, that's up to them, but I did want to let them know that, you know, hey, what I did was wrong, that I understood what I did was wrong, and so I want you to know that you deserved better. So,
yeah, that's wonderful. I think you had mentioned that once before on the air. But yeah, and that's important to say you're sorry when you hurt someone, because then, it, you know, I've been betrayed before, and I've never been apologized to the three biggest offenders in my life that have betrayed me have never apologized for it. And I think that it helps heal the wounds. You know, I'm over it, basically, but it would have helped. And even to this day, for someone to say, I'm really sorry that I hurt you, you know, you were a good person. You trusted me. You were wonderful. And I took that for granted, you know, or just to say, I'm sorry, I hurt you.
Yeah. Well, the quickest way to solve any argument and to, you know, start to repair things and reconcile after a betrayal has happened is really taking responsibility.
Yeah.
Now that can come in many different ways. You know, some people want you to make restitution. Some people want a genuine, you know, apology or want you to repent, or they may, you know, want something else. But however, you know, like taking responsibility for what you did. And I would say take responsibility in multiple mm-hmm. ways. Part of that responsibility is taking initiative to repair all the hurts and the misgivings, the things that you've done, really. And mm-hmm. that, you know, you need to work on trying to understand how it hurt the other person.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if you cheat on someone, and let's say they have PTSD, or they're reeling from it, or and they can't trust anyone, like, you need to not only take responsibility, but you need to understand or do your best, make your best attempt to understand how you hurt that person, because understanding precedes problem solving, and that's within any relationship. It doesn't matter if you and Junior have a conflict, or if you have a conflict with, you know, a spouse or a significant other, if it's an employee or a colleague, if it's your kid, it does not matter. Understanding mm-hmm. precedes problem solving. You have to try to understand where the other person is coming from and what they're experiencing. And I would say that saying that I understand you is not the same thing as the other person feeling understood. They have to feel understood, known, and experience a deep level of aroused empathy, so they feel known and seen and understood. And so those are some of the things that are necessary in order to try to repair the relationship after a major betrayal has happened.
Mm-hmm. And some can never be repaired. Out of the three people that I mentioned, one, I have a repaired relationship. The other two, I would never speak to again.
So They're not worth it. You know?
Well, you know, and then they weren't romantic. Well, one of them was romantic and business. The other one was friendship and business. And And you ended up in court. You know, I mean, it can get very ugly.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. And I'm not one to get litigious at all. But and sometimes you just have to. But let's go to break. We'll be right back. More coming up with Vaughn Eaglin, Surviving Betrayal by Your Partner. You are listening to One Life Radio.
Want to advertise on One Life Radio? Send us an email, info@oneliferadio.com.
We have an exciting announcement to make. Jared Ramirez, our on-air microbiome expert and his team at Enviromedica, took home the 2021 Nexti Award for Best New Product Supporting a Healthy Microbiome. The Nexti Awards recognize the most progressive, innovative, inspiring, and trustworthy products in the natural products industry. We've always known about their TerraFlora Deep Immune Symbiotic. It provides broad-spectrum gut health support while strengthening the body's adaptive response to immune challenges. It is a completely elevated gut immune system support product, a perfect welcome addition to your supplement routine. Visit Enviromedica.com to learn more and order your TerraFlora Deep Immune Symbiotic. Congratulations, Enviromedica.
10 years of positivity on your radio. This is One Life Radio.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Junior in the Mix and Von Eaglin. We are broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas on iHeartMedia as well as KMET in Southern California on ABC News Talk. Von, always great to have you on the show. Today our topic is surviving betrayal by your partner. Okay, so what does a betrayal do to a relationship, Von?
So a betrayal can really take a toll on a relationship because what happens is that you really, you decrease your trust in the person. We talked about this again, how you have to have trust because it's the foundational piece in every relationship and how it is multidimensional. But whenever you cannot trust your partner and they betray you, that plays a role. It plays a role inside of your brain, literally. Like the receptors in your brain, you literally feel physical pain at times, to be honest with you. And when that betrayal happens, talked about PTSD, but you have to go back in and try to rebuild trust whenever mm-hmm. a severe betrayal happens. Again, you have to also assess, was this a one-time betrayal? Is there a history of, you know, behavior or character issues with your partner? How does this affect your view of the person? Can you ever see them the same way? So you have to do some things in order to try to rebuild trust. Because you have to have what I call a positive moral certainty. In other words, you believe that your partner is someone who's a good person, you know, so, mm-hmm. you know, they're ethical, they're moral, and they will do the right thing when no one's looking. When someone betrays you and they violate your trust, a lot of that, you know, your expectation of that positive moral certainty of your partner's character, that would decrease. And you have to do some things to kind of go back in and rebuild it. So
So many things are going through my head. Not sure what to share, what not to. I've got so many different just, you know, stories and friends and things I've heard over the years of just, you know, betrayals, big betrayals. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's so if someone loves you, can the relationship truly, really ever be saved and completely healed and maybe even improved? Is that possible?
I would say yes, but it takes time and a lot of intentionality and work, to be honest with you, because there are three things, like when I work with couples, there are three components that you have to work on building when we talk about trust after a betrayal has happened. So the first thing you have to work on is your everyday interactions. The second thing is like how you process what we call regrettable incidents or past emotional injuries. And then the third thing is how you guys deal with conflict. So that first piece, in terms of how you deal with everyday interactions and sliding door moments, those are the things that you do every day. Because whenever you're trying to evaluate trust, you start to get all these data points of experiences with your partner during everyday life experiences. That can be like whenever they bid for some type of attention, if they try to make a request, hey, while you're up, would you mind getting me some butter, or would you do this, or, you know, can you help me, you know, with this, or run an errand for me? It could be in an interest or some kind of active excitement. It could be whenever you're trying to speak with them and bid for some conversation. If you're just venting, if you're problem solving together, humor, laughter, affection, playfulness, there are all these different things that will rebuild trust. But again, these everyday interactions, how you guys explore together, how you know, what's your sexual intimacy? What is, you know, is your partner, are they emotionally supportive? Do they display a lot of understanding, compassion, and empathy? Are they conscientious? There are all these things that happen in everyday moments that you have to go back in and make sure that they are intentionally built within your relationship, because it doesn't always happen organically.
Mm-hmm. I think so women
No, you said women what?
Well, I was just going to say, do you, I forgot. Actually. I dropped my pen right after I said it.
Maybe I'm just giving good information right here. So,
no, it was really good what I was going to say. I'll bring it back up in the computer here in my head.
So the second part, when we talk about regrettable incidents and past emotional injuries, you want to try to assess, does your partner have the ability to empathize and see things from your perspective? Do you walk away feeling understood after you process a regrettable incident? And there is something, I'm going to give you this word, there's something called the Zagarnik effect. And it's a researcher, the Zagarnik effect, Z-E-I-G-A-R-N-I-K, Zagarnik effect. And so what that means is that if a couple has negative events that are not fully processed, so again, they've had some kind of emotional injury, what I call a regrettable incident or some kind of negative event, and if they don't fully process it, then they remember it and they will continuously rehearse that repeatedly inside of their mind. They're going to continue to ruminate about it within their mind. So it's important that whenever you start processing it, that I talked about understanding and empathy, if you don't fully process it in a way that makes sense to you, then you're going to continue to rehearse it. It's almost like trauma in your brain, because when trauma happens, you're always kind of trying to figure out, okay, what just happened? How do I make sense of this? But same thing applies whenever you have some type of emotional injury. There are times I'm talking to my wife, and jokingly I say, is this a grievance that you're bringing up right here that I have to apologize for?
Uh-huh.
And by and large, many times it is. It's like, you know, there are certain things that I did. You know, we've been married 17 years. I did something, you know, 10 years ago. And she said, remember that time? And I'm like, oh, dang, man, I gotta go back in and apologize for it all over again. But again, it wasn't fully processed back then. So I'm getting the skill set and the tools that, okay, let's fully process this now. And the more you process and the person feels understood, and even whenever you bring it up yourself, we do this even with trauma, that the more I bring it up, let's say I'm the one that cheated, the more I bring it up and I let you know that it's on my mind, the less you have to, because then you recognize that I see your pain. And so, again, you have to fully process events as they come. And then that third piece I talked about, you know, everyday interactions, regrettable incidents, that third piece about conflict interactions, not all conflict interactions are the same. You have low conflict interactions, and you have high conflict interactions, you know, where it becomes extremely nasty. And whenever there's a lot of betrayal and there's mistrust, you're going to be in a state of hypervigilance. And anytime a couple is dealing with an issue, when there's too much physiological arousal, they're not going to be able to process that issue very well. Because we've talked about flooding. Whenever you flood, that means that you, again, the neocortex gets hijacked. You can't problem solve and rationalize and be creative, and you can't listen to your partner. You're going to reject incoming information. And so during conflict interactions, you have to learn how to, one, not flood, but then also learn how to self-soothe. And it's really, really important that you also learn how to soothe your partner whenever they're getting too physiologically aroused, because that will rebuild trust too. So learning how to soothe your partner.
Wow. And for people that don't know what flooding means, can you explain it to them?
So so there's a part in your brain. So you have the lower part of your brain. You have your brain stem, and then there's something called the amygdala. And that's the part, here's the thing you need to know, fight, flight, or freeze. Whenever your amygdala is activated, you know, you can have a stressful interaction with your boss and that activates your amygdala. It's almost like you're being chased by a lion, literally, and you will have the physiological processes that go on whenever that happens. So for most people with a basic resting heart rate, that's normal. Whenever your heart rate gets over 100 beats per minute, the part of your brain that is responsible for fight, flight, or freeze gets overstimulated, and you will revert back to that part. So the higher functioning parts of your brain are no longer available for you to use. So again, you cannot problem solve. I call it slipping your lid. So your neocortex gets overloaded, and to give people a little bit of insight into this, the main sympathetic neurotransmitter in the brain is norepinephrine. And what happens is whenever you flood, it takes about 20 minutes in order to calm down, simply because, again, your heart rate gets over 100 beats per minute, the neocortex is hijacked, and you revert back to fight, flight, or freeze. It takes about 20 minutes because the brain does not have a natural enzyme to degrade the norepinephrine once it hits your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to you have to let your blood cycle through your brain in order to decrease the physiological arousal component. So if you're trying to self-soothe, if you get too upset, let's say you have anxious issues or you're really angry, and once you flood, you have to do a few things to learn how to self-soothe. One, check your breathing. You're probably not breathing, or you're probably only using the top part of your lungs. So you have to intentionally learn how to breathe. You have to tense certain muscles. You have to go to your happy place in your mind. But the main thing is that you can't continue to rehearse the thing that's pissing you off, or you can't continue to rehearse the distress maintaining thought. So you and your couple, you know, you have a fight, you start walking up. I can't believe she said that. Next time I'm going to block. If you keep doing that, all it's going to do is keep you upset. So you have to do something that's going to distract you in order to decrease the flooding that's going on. And then once you guys or neither one of you guys are flooding, then we can start to make some progress. Now, some couples flood really quickly. They have a lot of bad interactions. A lot of money's been taken out of their emotional bank account. They will flood really quickly. So that's what flooding is. And you have to watch out for that during conflict interactions. But, you know, if there's betrayal there, you may flood much more quickly if there's not betrayal and you do have a lot of trust.
Well, you know, and that's one of the question that I forgot is when you were speaking earlier. I think that women are more able to forgive betrayal than men are able to forgive betrayal. I think because
we're talking about having sex with somebody. I would say yes, you know.
Yes. Well, yeah. And you know what? We got to go for a quick break. So let's talk about when we come back because it's real. Right?
Yeah. Right. We're territorial.
All right. Yeah. You are, you guys. It's like you got to pee on it, right?
Mm-hmm. You're right.
So. Pee on the bush. Oh, gosh. I can't believe I said that. Oh, my God. What is wrong? Okay. We're going to break. You're listening to One Life Radio.
Want to advertise on One Life Radio? Send us an email, info@oneliferadio.com.
Hey, everyone. I've got some fabulous news. Castor and Pollux, a brand that I've used for years, has joined us as our official pet sponsor of One Life Radio. Castor and Pollux is the maker of America's number one organic pet food. Their organics line of recipes is the only complete line of USDA organically certified pet food. And their pristine recipes are made with responsibly sourced ingredients such as wild-caught salmon and grass-fed beef. Castor and Pollux is the most comprehensive portfolio of purposeful pet food, setting the new standard in pet nutrition. Shop and order online at CastorPollux.com. That's CastorPollux.com. Or find it at Whole Foods, Natural Grocers, Sprouts, or Central Market.
A decade of educating and learning. You're listening to One Life Radio.
All right. I love that song, Junior. I haven't heard it in years. Oh, my gosh. I don't want to talk. I just want to listen to the music. Everyone, welcome back to One Life Radio. This is Bernadette with Junior in the Mix and Von Eaglin. We are broadcasting live from Dallas, Texas on iHeartMedia as well as KMET in Southern California on ABC News Talk. We are continuing our conversation on surviving betrayal by your partner. Right before the break, I said that women are more forgiving than men, especially when it comes to betrayal, because I feel like men, this is what I feel like, and based on experiences that I've had with friends and brothers and just, you know, just listening to what men really say, that once a woman, it's almost like they own it, like it's their property. And if someone else touches it, they don't want it anymore.
So, I mean, we're joking about it, but, you know, guys, we are, at least for the most part, I'm overgeneralizing in some ways, but I tend to believe that most guys are a little bit more territorial because, by and large, when a guy sleeps with you, many times he believes, even, you know, he believes that he has the ability to go sleep with you if he wants to again in the future. Now, just that, you know, not necessarily, you know, I mean, I don't want to necessarily get into a debate about consent or anything like that. But many times, guys, we have an issue when we believe that another man has entered your body. And, something about, you know, guys in terms of how we measure ourselves up. Because when guys, whenever we interact with each other, we do this posturing, so to speak. So, you know, whenever I interact with you, I'm automatically sizing you up. And it's something that happens even on an unconscious level. I believe women do it too. But I mean, Junior, I mean, back me up here. when you walk in the gym, do you look at every single guy just unconsciously and be like, you know, I can take that guy. He's going to give me some trouble if we get into it. But that other guy, you know, I mean, I can take him too. Do you do that? I mean, or is it just me?
I don't go to the gym much, but when I'm at the bar, yeah, I do that.
What is up with you guys?
I mean, it's just a guy thing. So I just sometimes think, I'm like, if something happened, I'd be okay with that one. I'd be okay with that one. It's just I check the outlook of how
I kind of get it, though, right? Because men are the protectors, right? And so you always have to be, you know, on your, you got to be watching things. You got to be vigilant, right?
We're always measuring ourselves up against other men. And so what happens is whenever I interact with another guy, he will posture himself, and then I will posture myself based on what I think, you know, certain, you know, attributes or values or whatever the case is. And then he'll reposture himself, and then I'll reposture myself. So it's kind of like these two peacocks doing a dance in a sense. But we size ourselves up by the other guys in our environment, because whether you know it or not, men don't say this out loud, but we're always asking ourselves, like, hey, you know, does this guy see me as a male? Does he see me as an alpha male? You can't be the alpha male in every environment, of course, but, you know, we kind of try to determine the hierarchy of the social hierarchy within the room many times. And, you know, we know there is an actual biological effect here, because the alpha male is probably going to get more women. And when a guy sleeps with another woman, and let's say you slept with, let's say my wife or, you know, my girlfriend in the past, let's say they cheated on me, I'm going to be sizing myself up and wondering, did she enjoy that other guy better? You know, what about me? Or, you know, so there's something about that, because, you know, we experience shame and trying to figure out, you know, our masculinity and our identity, our sexuality and different things like that. And so, yeah, I mean, it's multidimensional, but yeah, we do size other people up, and we can be really territorial. And sometimes our ego is much more bigger, but also much more fragile in some ways than women, you know.
What a great discovery I've discovered here today, and all the women out there listening. I had no idea that this goes on all over the place, all the time, with men.
But, you know,
I have to say, and I think that women are more forgiving for a couple different reasons. Number one, they typically want to save the marriage, especially if there's children involved, and there's financial incentive as well. You know, especially if, you know, you're living this opulent lifestyle, you're like, man, I don't want to give that up. I guess I will forgive them. You know, you trade the trust and the loyalty for, you know, a bigger pocketbook and a nicer car and more clothes or whatever. Mm-hmm. Some women are like that. Some women are not. I can't imagine staying in a relationship with someone who cheated on me. To me, that's a sign it's over. And
Well, some people, especially if they're in like higher income brackets, some women literally accept that trade-off. I want to have this kind of lifestyle. I want to live in this certain area. And even though he cheats, what he's doing, he's not cheating. He's just exercising options. As long as he doesn't bring any diseases home, he keeps it private, I'm fine with him cheating.
And they don't even know what they're giving up. They don't even know what they're giving up. If a person is bought and paid for, I mean, it's just like, you're giving up your personal freedom, your spirit, if you will, almost. And the music's gonna start here in about probably 20 seconds, I think. But
those women may not see it that way, but, you know, at the end of the day, trust is important. We have to have
that.
You have to build it. And again, if betrayal happens, you need to do the work in order to try to repair the relationship and reconcile whenever it's broken.
You know, I'm not going to have time to tell this whole story. I know it, but there's a friend of mine. I'll try. There's a friend of mine who this other couple. Okay, so he cheated on her while they were engaged. She forgave him. She forgave him, and my other friend said, that's because she doesn't really love him. She doesn't really love him, or she would have been so hurt, she wouldn't have been able to marry him. But we'll leave it at that. We'll talk about it next time, okay? Vaughn, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. I thought today's show was excellent, very high-spirited. I hope everyone out there listening enjoyed it. You know what? You get one body, you get one mind, and you get one life. Get out there today and do what? Do what, you guys? Junior, Vaughn, what should they do? Size other guys up? What are they doing?
Make sure you're sized up right.
There you go.